Good evening, everyone.
We would like to welcome you to the to this panel about legal issues facing a non-commercial online game or game, a Star Wars-based online game. Our panel will be shared into two parts. The first part will be presented by Annette Polke from Germany. It will be mostly about copyrights and how we handle them inside our game. And the second part that I will present, and which will be our relations between the Star Wars Combined or game and LucasArts, the legal owner of all computer game copyrights. I will let Annette start with her part and will then switch to my part.
Thank you. So the first part will mainly concentrate on copyright. First, I wanted to demonstrate to all of you how important copyright is. Do you know why Lara Croft is a woman? In fact, when Eidos started to design the game, they just knew that their hero should be an adventurer archaeologist who should search for precious treasures in lost cities and hidden labyrinths, which would be protected by traps. So, what does this add to? As soon as they realized this, they could already hear the lawyers knocking to their door, because you will think about this. And so did they. So, this is how Lara was created. And if this is the influence of copyright on a big commercial game who could easily pay license fees, you will understand why it's even more important for a small, non-commercial, completely fan-produced game that cannot afford to pay license or could not afford to pay a lawyer in a lawsuit. So, what's the situation for us? What is a combine? Most of you will not know it yet. The combine is a free, massively multiplayer online role-playing simulation game based on the Star Wars universe, having been developed by amateurs during their spare time. So, it's an online game, it's based on Star Wars, and it's developed by amateurs for free. This alone defines why we will have difficulties, because it uses Star Wars copyrighted material, and it's an amateur project. Where is the combine? This is another difficult problem, because if I say copyright, whose copyright is it? So we have the server, which is located in the US. Then there are the people who lead the game. We call them the administrators in our game. We have five of them at the moment. Five or six?
Six.
Six of them at the moment. You can see them. They're located in Canada, Sweden, Belgium, Germany, and Australia. A lot of different copyright laws apply in these countries. Then we have our users. They're scattered all around the world on all continents. And then there's the other player we have to take into consideration, LucasArts, also US-based. To give an understanding of our problems, I have to give you a short overview of the history of copyright. I'm not a lawyer. What I'm telling you here is all what I learned through years of work in various fandoms. Around 1800, before 1800, copyright was usually not protected. That meant if you created something, everyone could rip you off and make money from it, and the author would often die poor. So around 1800, most countries tried to fix this by passing national copyright law. This still meant that if you had your book published, for example, in France, who may have a copyright law, someone in Germany could still produce your work and make money with it. So it was not a good solution. There were a need for international treaties, and the first of them was a Bern Convention at 1886. It was, in fact, the first international treaty, but what is now important, many European countries joined it, but the US did not. This is important because it gave rise to a tendency that copyright law developed parallel but differently in Europe and US for the next 100 years. During the 20th century also, new media was introduced, like photo, movies, sounds, and now digital media. And the copyright was extended. First, the Berne Convention was about books. Then the question was, and what about photos? What about pictures? What about film? Whenever a new medium was invented, copyright had to be transferred to it. Right now we have reached a stage where the two parallel developments of Europe and US are converging again. 1989, the US joined the Berne Convention, and since then many international treaties have been passed to harmonize international law. But still, we have different laws, and this is why the question, where is the combine, is so important. So what are the main differences between European and US copyright law? Here's a comparison. In the US, you have the option of fair use. Most of you will know the concept of fair use. We will look at it a little closer. The basic idea is that there are some uses of copyrighted material that are not illegal. In Europe, we don't have the concept of fair use. We don't even know the term. Instead, we have a right to quote, which is a little more clearer. In the end, the fair use and the right to quote are very similar to each other, but the term fair use is slightly misleading because it appeals to a sense of fairness, where the right to quote clearly says there's a certain quantity you may use. Then another important difference is that according to US law, you can sign away your copyright, while in European law, traditionally, you can only sign away the exploit rights. Like you're giving a book to a publisher and he will get some money for it. But in the end, you will always retain your copyright. And if he stops publishing the book, for example, you will have your right back automatically. This also means that he cannot prevent the book to go to the market again. So the US law is mostly right holder friendly. The copyright holder is the strongest player in this game, where the European law is more author friendly. It's more centered around the author, the person who actually creates things. So there is a third player in this game, and this is a user. What about the user? In fact, the new technologies, digital technologies, are very user-friendly. It makes it easy to copy fast, easily, and inexpensive. And this is very much user-friendly. But it's a challenge to the traditional copyright systems. And this is the position we are in right now. In fact, the option to fast, easily, and inexpensively copy all kinds of content, texts, images, music, have given rise to a new, what has been dubbed remix culture. What is this? I have put together a few examples. For example, a DJ's remix, which is not working. You should hear now music, a remix of the Imperial March, but I think you all know what a DJ remix is. Or a book review. This is a more traditional way of remix culture, because you have to take an already existing product, a book, to write a review. Or this presentation. I used a lot of copyrighted material to make this presentation. Or the Star Wars Combine. So the question is this fair use or is it not fair use? Fair use. I quoted the old text, but what is most important, it is in the middle. For purposes such as criticism, comment, news reporting, teaching, scholarship, or research. So the fair use had very little to do with a sense of fairness, but it's using it for specific purposes. So what about the examples I quoted? A DJ remix? Is it educational? Is it scholarship? No, it's not. So it's not fair use, usually. A book review? Yes, it's criticism. So it's usually fair use. There are still, if I say yes, it's always yes, but. For example, if you quote excessively, like you quote half of the book, it's no longer fair use. But in general, it is. This presentation? Yes, it's educational, scholarship, it's comment. A little bit of everything of it. So I think it's fair use. I hope so. The Star Wars Combine? No. It's not educational. Okay, you can learn a lot through it, but it's not educational. It's not scholarship. It's clearly no fair use. So we're not covered by fair use. Let's take a look, closer look of the problems we have to deal with. If we take a look at the screenshot, you all will know this image. Most of you will know the ship as a Millennium Falcon. We know it as the YT-1300. So it's a ship type we took from the original movies. And of course, we don't have the copyright for it. If you look at the next picture, this is the YT-510. This is a ship type we created just for our game. And the picture was done by one of the players who is also doing artwork for our game. So, for this image, we have the copyright. Next image, what is this? This is in fact my in-character picture, and I took it from a comic book. So, this is not even done by the combine itself, but still it contributes to the whole environment. And it's not copyright of LucasArts, it's not copyright of the combine, it's something different. And if you look even closer, if you now look under the surface, it becomes even more complicated because we have the source code, the code of the game engine, which is, of course, copyright of the combine because we created it. But who is we? This is one function, and there you can see author GK. This is one of our programmers, author Wainham, that's him. Author Drayton, that's me. So three people created to this one function. If any one of us leaves the team, can we take one third of the function with us? Of course not. So it's a very complicated situation, matters of copyright. So, the Star Wars Combine contains material copyright by LucasArts, like images, names, trademarks. For example, Star Wars itself is a trademark and copyrighted by Lucasfilms and LucasArts. Then we have original material, images, text, and especially the source code for the game engine that was created by dozens of volunteers in more than 5 years of work. And of course, we have the copyright for us, but who is we? And then there is other material from third parties, mostly images. Whenever possible, we try to get permission from the author, but sometimes it's difficult, like you will find a good picture on the web and you try to find out who made it. So, I'll ask my question again. What is a combine? It's a fascinating example of a new emerging remix culture, no doubt about it. But it's also a copyright nightmare. Where is a combine? As a result, the combine is in deep trouble. So, what do we do about it? And this is what the second part of our panel will be about, how we actually deal with this situation. So, before I give over to Wainham. If you're interested, I'm not a lawyer, but I put for you some references, especially the first I want to mention to you, it's a very good introduction. Then the second and the third are the official sources, so to speak, the U.S. Copyright Office and the official page of WIPO. WIPO is an organization that is responsible for all international intellectual property treaties. And there is also a good page from Stanford University on especially fair use. So, this was the theory. Now we will move to the more practical application.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer. A small break allowing us to switch the cable from one computer to the other. So this is now the second part, mostly centered around the relationship with LucasArts. Here is the content of this second part. First, we will remind what is the Star Wars Combine and what is the difficult situation we're in. We'll then describe shortly the trademark of Star Wars and what is their policy concerning the usage of copyrighted material. Then we will explore in details our exact relationship with LucasArts, relationship that started in 2 years ago, 2 years and a half. And we will close this presentation with a summary of a quest to find a legal entity for the Combine. We tried to become a kind of company or non-profit company, and we will explain the difficulties linked to that quest. And we will end up, of course, with our conclusion about all this. So let's start with the definition of the game. What is a Star Wars Combine? You have here, in one single sentence, the exact definition of our game. We are free, massively multiplayer online role-playing simulation game. First part. We're based on the Star Wars universe, and we're developed by amateurs during their spare time. If we have to keep only the keywords that will interest us in, we may retain that we are free, that we are an online computer game, and that we are based on the Star Wars universe. And of course, that we are not endorsed by LucasArts, LucasFilm, or any Lucas anything. Where can you find us? Online on swcombine.com. Since when do we exist? Since 98, which means we are an online game about Star Wars from 4 years before the famous Star Wars galaxy. A few indications about our membership. We have over 16,000 registered players inside our database, and we can say that more than 10% of them are playing this game actively. Now a small reminder about our current situation. With Star Wars games, all copyrights are owned by LucasArts. This is no secret. Everyone knows it, that the only company authorized to create a Star Wars related game is Star Wars related computer game is LucasArts. In the Combine, we, the developers, we do not want to create a game not about Star Wars. We are Star Wars fans. We don't want to play with dragons. We don't want to play with aliens. We want the Star Wars universe. This is what we like. This is what we dream about. We are also a worldwide team, like you saw previously, from Canada to Australia, including Europe. Developers are spread everywhere. This is quite difficult when we need to manage the project, because we don't know to which law we must refer. Should I use the Belgian law, the US law, or another law? Good question. Finally, we are a free game. No profit is generated from the game. We are not earning any cent. But, of course, maintaining this game is costing money, and we need to get money to pay the charge, for example, the server, the bandwidth also. What about Star Wars copyright? You all know that Star Wars was created by George Lucas. This is an evidence. Therefore, Star Wars is under a very strict copyright. The current policy of Lucasfilm and LucasArts is to allow fans to create clubs like the 501st, to create websites, to create fan activities about Star Wars. And everything is tolerated as long as what they do remains descriptive. You may explain what the game is about. You may post screenshots about one of the existing game. You may describe what starships are. You may create a huge database, an encyclopedia, technical commentaries, spoiler about new movies, or whatever. All that is allowed. A good example of allowed website is theforce.net. You probably all know it. But what about computer game? The answer is easy. Computer games related to Star Wars are the strict property of LucasArts. They are the only authorized company that can create and release and sell these games. So, how did they react when they first learned about us, and especially when they were about to release Star Wars Galaxy? This is what we will expose right now. I can't say it's like in the movie. It all started with a menace. In January of 2002, I received an email from antipiracy@lucasfilm.com. You must imagine that we were online since 4 years, and suddenly, in a winter morning, I got the following email. And it's not the kind of kind email, not the kind of email you want to receive every day. As you can read, they wanted us to immediately discontinue the use of Star Wars copyright and to close our website at once. We received this email without any explanation about why we had to close the website and why many other websites could remain open. So we decided to react. Of course, the first thing we did was complying. So we shut down the website. This to show a kind of goodwill to LucasArts. And immediately after, we started to look for information. We looked for contact. We emailed them, we called them, and it took a few days, but finally we could ask questions to authorized people. We could ask why us, and not these hundreds of other Star Wars websites. Why us still, even if we are a game, even if we use copyrighted material, we remain non-profit? Aren't we some kind of fair use? And if we are not under the fair use law, what exactly did we do wrong? Where did we breach the line? And what could we do in order to repair what we did and be able to continue with our activities? At the same time, we received the media attention. Fan clubs, important Star Wars websites like theforce.net, media like zdnet.com, they looked for information. They heard about the story and they wanted to know, hey, what's happening? Lucas is closing Star Wars fan activities. Can you tell us more about this? We could not say much at that time, but we were just telling what was happening to us. With this contact, we quickly learned that LucasArts was really the sub-companies behind this entire affair. I have been in direct contact with the business and the public relations directors of LucasArts during 1 hour or 1 hour and a half, just to discuss about the combined, the situation, what was wrong and what was right. In the end of this conference call, we could reopen our website for an undefined amount of time. It was still back in January or February 2002. There was no written agreement. Our situation was still pending, but at least we were allowed to survive. We drew some conclusions out of this. The first thing we noticed is that they respected our behavior. They liked the fact that we complied to their decision. They liked they appreciate the fact that we closed down the website, that we asked question politely, and that we wanted to repair the situation and not abuse of it or not damage their image. At the same time, we realized that they cannot make their fans angry because their fans are the customers. If they make their customers angry, they lose money. Business law. And then we got a new hope. It was 8 months afterwards. Exactly 2 days before my wedding. It was an excellent wedding gift. I got another conference call with LucasArts and the same people. And this time they were looking for more information. Information about the combine. Were we making money? That was the big first question they asked me. No, we are not making money. Not at that time, and still not today. They asked if it was possible for people to confuse galaxies with the combine. And then I had to explain and tell them that our game is not as nice as their game. We have 2D graphics, they have nice 3D. They have all the budget to create a powerful, nice game. We only work in our spare time. Their game is complete, ours is under development, so there is no competition. And finally, I told them we were playing or about to release a client interface that was only to be played through a web browser. while, as you know, galaxies is your galaxies. To play galaxies, you need to install the software. They also ask a few game mechanism details, how it worked, what were the main features about our game, and they wanted to be sure that there was some kind of difference between galaxies and the Combine. After this second conference call, we were still allowed to continue. And for the first time, they talk about the possibility for us to get a free license, allowing us to use copyrighted Star Wars material. This was really a nice new hope. Then they strike back, and on a totally different front this time. From October of that year until December of 2003, we got strictly no news from them, and we had to learn patience the hard way. This led us to the return of LucasArts. It was in January of this year. We were back on track this time. I received another email, but as you will see, a much, much, much nicer one. This time, they wanted to get in touch with us to settle an agreement, a written agreement aiming to give us a free license, a free Star Wars license, the dream of any Star Wars fan. And these talks led to the first draft of the agreement early February of this year. Unfortunately, this draft had been quickly written, and it contained mistakes, juridical mistakes that we could not accept. It did not fit the combined needs. We need to be able to talk about our game, because if we do not talk about our game, we do not get new players. If we do not get new players, we have no reason to exist. A game is about players. And in the agreement, we could not use Star Wars material for marketing purpose. We could put it on our website, but we could not be here today to speak about it. Or each time we would have to pronounce the words Star Wars, we would have to show you a screen with the words on them. We sent then a counter proposal that was really fitting our needs. We wanted to protect our own work, like the source code. We wanted to be able to advertise about our game, and still we wanted that anything that we had done previous to the agreement was not taken into consideration, because maybe we made mistakes. We did not want to sign something with retroactive effects. During yet another conference call, the business affair administrator I was talking with told me that the counter-proposal was acceptable by them. The only real technical problem was concerning the source code of the Combine, because in a game engine, you can usually not always differentiate the source code and the image. In no game, you can really have, you really have two paths, the pictures and the code. And if we want tomorrow, we can change completely the pictures and create a Lord of the Ring games or a World War II game, but that's not what we want. Because of that, we want to keep the source code as our property and not give it to LucasArts for free. That would be a too nice gift for them. So as of today, we're still waiting for the second and hopefully final version of this agreement. We have no news of them since 3 months, and that's long. Even after being so close of a first draft, and we wait. Okay, now a totally different topic, request for a legal entity. What is a legal entity? It's the status. The status of the Combine. Why do we want a legal entity? First, to easier manage our assets and our resources. We are several people spread around the world. We have a server in yet another country. We manage some money to pay for the charges, to pay for the what I will call development cost, like software, domain name registration, or anything else that could be needed for the development and survival of this game. Even printing flyers. It's not much, but it's still included in our cost. Also, we need a juridical entity to protect the team. If things turn very bad, it's better if we have an entity to get behind, because we don't want LucasArts to sue each of us. That would prevent us to work, or that puts some of us in a very bad situation. And finally, we want a legal entity to protect our work and our game engine. We have achieved something that we want to keep and protect. Some developers come and then leave, but the work remains. And if they leave with their work, it's quite damaging for us. So we need something where to put this code. The main problems in this quest are about what law to use. I will say, the CEO, the Steam Master, the project manager of this game. I live in Belgium. In Belgium, there is no suitable law for this. I cannot create a profit company because we are non-profit. And if we create a profit company, we will get LucasArts on the back because they will say, you're making money, even if we don't. I cannot use the non-profit company model because in Belgium, the law is very difficult, and it's a long process to create a non-profit company, and I would have to exert the combined activities only in Belgium. That does not suit us, neither. So, could I use another law? The US law? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not a US resident. I cannot create a US entity under my name. Should I take someone else to be the legal representative of this entity? Maybe yes, maybe no. There can be some risk to that. The main risk is that guy that I don't know live with our work. Yeah, don't laugh. That could happen. That happened to others already. And finally, what kind of entity? Even if I knew in which country I could decide about it. Should we be a non-profit according to the US law? To the European law? Should we be a kind of cooperative? Or should we hire a US cabinet of lawyers that will make us a specific juridical entity tailored for us for a few hundreds of thousands of dollars? We don't have that much money. That's sad. So what are we finally? We are what we call a de facto entity. Just an association of people from all around the world who try to achieve a goal. Nothing more, nothing less. No legal entity behind this. And this is where I will conclude this panel. About the copyright issue, what can we retain from this? That Star Wars material are copyrighted by LucasArts, Lucasfilm, and all other sub-companies. That we are still waiting for an agreement from them, if it comes. The source code and the website are and other non-copyrighted material, they are owned by us. But who are us exactly? And the us is what we try to define with the legal entity quest. But as you saw, it remains without a firm and definitive answer. We are exactly in what we call in Belgium a juridical hole. There is no law for us. We are not against any law, but there is no law that could help us. It's a real hole. It's the new generation of problems that are directly coming from the emergence of internet technologies. And currently, this us is represented by the Steam Master, myself, so everything is under my name. The good things, but also the bad things. If LucasArts wants to turn on someone, it will be on my back. Okay, I would like to thank Electronics Frontier for welcoming us this year and last year. Thank you very much. And I'm sure that some of you have a few questions, so do not hesitate to shoot.
Based on what you've said, it sounds like you're still in hiatus in terms of what LucasArts is sort of letting you do. But I mean, is the game still playing, right now? So you're
Yes, the game is still available, playing, and still under development.
So, and they seem to be okay with it. Like, in, I mean, you said that the website is back up. I've never played the game, but is that tantamount to saying that the game is still up? And is the website and the game one and the same?
Yes, the website. This is a game that you play through your browser, so the website and the game are the same.
How do you perpetuate your website financially? Is it just out of your own pocket, or?
Well, if we had to work for this and also pay for this, I would stop this immediately, because that's now how we should live. We work for this, but happily, we can cover the charge and various costs through donations, mostly donations since 4 years, and since a few months, advertisement is helping back a bit. No other source of incomes.
Have you all looked into European Union laws regarding nonprofit entities? And do they have any, or are they working on any? I know that's sort of a new thing.
Yes. I tried to discuss and meet several lawyers at different level, both in Belgium and at the European level, from juridical teachers and professors from universities to specific Belgian lawyers, and there is no law for us. It's under work, or it will come in a few years, but currently the non-profit model is really not what we can take. Mostly because we are not exercising our activities only in Europe. 50% of our players are in North America. This is why we cannot choose a strictly European model.
So if LucasArts, say, like there's somebody in the audience or something, you know, and immediately said, okay, we're going to give you this agreement, if you don't have a legal entity yet, so who would they make that agreement with?
The answer is quite simple, with me.
And would that be, well, I guess this is a question probably nobody knows the answer to, but how would that transfer to the new entity? Or?
That's a very good question, and I already wondered that myself. I suppose I should then be able to discuss with LucasArts to transfer the license for which would be to my name, to that legal entity name, or if I leave the game development to my successor. It should be possible. There is no reason not to, because they are allowing the Combine to exist, not myself to use Star Wars. No more questions? Yeah, we just had to ask.
A more generic question is, did LucasArts give you any flack over accepting donations? Did they have any suspicion that this was more of a subscriptions on the sly or anything like that? I'm just curious for other games, for other people who might be pursuing games, what the take on that was from LucasArts.
This is a topic I specifically discussed with them by phone call, and I told them we were receiving donations and that these donations allow us to survive. And they told me that donations were okay. So hopefully they will keep on that way.
If you personally have to accept donations and you don't have a corporation or something that is really receiving them, just curious, is that Belgian income then that you have to claim? Or can you claim that as a hobby? Now it goes beyond just LucasArts.
This is a very, very good question. I know. There is no problem with that question, because it's also something we studied. With the Belgian law, if I used money for my own profit, then it would be considered as income, as incomes, and I would have to declare them for my tax report. As all the money I received, I use it only for the combined cost, I do not declare it. As simple as that. So, I do not declare it, and from what I heard from specialists, I won't have any problem because I am not using it for my own profit. I'm not buying a new computer, I'm not buying a new car, I'm not having pocket money. It's just everything for the combine. To pay the server, to pay for development software, to pay for documentation for the team. So Belgian law is good about that.
I feel like I'm hogging the microphone, but so that's interesting in that if people make a donation to you, since you're not a nonprofit company, then they can't declare it as a donation. So then that means that they don't get any tax exemptions for that. I mean, that's sort of interesting. I mean, if you were a nonprofit in America anyway, if I gave you money,
yeah.
I would basically get money from the government. You know, I would pay less to the government because of that.
Yes, but we're not.
That's not really a question.
Yes, this is why I would like to become a nonprofit company, because we would receive more money and could speed up sometimes development. But if the situation was easy, we would not be here to explain and talk about it. Nothing more? You sure? Oh, there.
I have a slightly more general question just about your development process. How did you go about setting up project management for a large project like this spread across many developers in many countries? I mean, where did you start? What was the first step for you guys?
The first step was a crazy decision a few years ago from the dying ashes of another Star Wars simulation. We decided to continue with a dying game and recreate it from scratch. And one day in December 98, we opened a website saying, register here, new Star Wars simulation online. And that was the beginning. From there, we started coding a bit, then planning, then designing, then redoing the entire thing once or twice, and we are today.
Maybe it's interesting that all our programmers, artists, developers all come from the player base. So whoever is working for the Combine once started out as a player. So the development of a game also depends a little on who's joining and who may be willing to help. For example, if someone comes with a good idea like, oh, could I program, what was the last project? A cemetery. We say, fine, do it. If someone comes up and says, I want to make a newsletter, we say, fine, do it, usually. So the game develops a lot by the initiative of the members. And we, of course, we try to give them direction, but as they are all volunteers, we cannot give them orders.
Yes, really. The game is developing feature by feature in parallel. Some developers prefer working on specific topics, other developers will work on something else, and on some part of the years, some feature will be more advanced than other features. As project manager, I try to keep everything in balance so that we go slowly but surely toward the completion of what we have in mind. It's a difficult quest. Especially doing it only during a spare time. During the day, we have to work for money.
That's what I was about to ask. What are your day jobs?
Sorry?
Day job, what do you do?
Oh,
be surprised.
Not a nice question. During the university holidays, I'm teaching Latin to students who need Latin for their studies and who didn't learn it at school. And during the rest of the time, I code for the Combine, and I write books on everything ancient languages, ancient mythology. So it's both things that will leave me a lot of time I can freely distribute amongst projects.
And I worked as project leader in a power supply factory. I design and implement driver for power supply systems. So you see, nothing to do with games. Also, I may speak about the rest of the team about that. We have the two Australian people, they are students still. One is a computer science student. The Swedish guy is a network manager and is also doing some more studies. And the Canadian is working. He has a construction, civil engineer in construction degree, and works in as manager in a shop currently. So, yes, I think that's it.
Yeah. What computer languages is the Combine written in?
Sorry?
What computer languages?
It's a simple database application using a MySQL database and a PHP engine, and HTML and a few JavaScript for the interface. As simple as that, which make it very platform compatible.
Why did you not want to create a non-profit organization under U.S. law?
Because I do not live in the USA. Simply, and I can't because of that. But give me the green card, the U.S. citizenship, and I will do it.
You talked about development tools for your development team. What sort of purchases did you make?
Integrated development environment, documentation, specific software that are add-ons for website, pre-made package. That's mostly that kind of tools that we need. We try a lot to rely on open source software, but sometimes it's better to work with a working package. Of course, what we use is extremely limited by the resource we have.
I was wondering why you decided to do a web-based application instead of one NC that you would install on your machine.
Can I answer this?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, in fact, we started out with a client-server architecture, and the first client was done in Java. We mostly moved to a web-based solution because this is where we had the manpower, the resources. It's far easier to find people who can do HTML or PHP or MySQL than to find people who can do Java or C++ or something like this. And especially it's good because you can use people with various levels of experience. For example, someone who can only do HTML can do one task, and someone who's good at PHP can do another task, and someone who's good with JavaScript can do just the JavaScript, so it's easier to work with people with different experience levels.
Aside of that, we had a few problems during our development process. The first client was written in Java, like Jennifer said, and 4 years ago, the developer who wrote it left the game, and we had to redesign a new client from scratch. Then that new programmer left 2 years ago, and we had to redesign again because the source code was really unreadable.
Yeah, but this is a good
people
example.
Tried to continue from yeah. that existing work, but it did not lead anywhere. So we started with this new base, with PHP. We had no more to rely on two teams, one for the client, one for the server. We only needed one team which could share the work and work on both sides, as it was the same language. It's easier to manage.
In fact, it made it possible to even have a programmer team, because, to be honest, before that, while we had a client, there were always one person doing the client. And I can say this from my own experience, because when there was a second client, it was created in Visual Basic, and I started programming for the Combine because I have been a Mac addict for years, so I couldn't use it. And I was playing the Combine for maybe 3 years. It was my most important hobby, and I was faced with the option that maybe I have to leave it because it would not run on my computer. So I took up programming again, and I did a client for Macintosh in Real Basic. And I just know that many people offered help, but I felt unable to really share the work with others, so developing a client and a team was simply not possible because it was so difficult to split up the tasks. It would have been possible if we had a real office where you would meet in real life, talk to people in real time, every day. But with people spread around the world and all the communication has to be done by email or on IRC or ICQ, it's very difficult to develop a program, a client application under the circumstances. And a web-based solution, you can break it down into sub-projects more easily.
You may try yelling at someone who is working for you in New Zealand. Not sure it will work very efficiently. And this is the kind of problem we had. When we said to a New Zealand developer that the game development was lagging because it was late, that was not concerning him too much. He was just there for his own fun, so he did not feel forced to work. With only one language and only one platform to develop, other developers may easily take over, replace, and help. It is much easier and development goes faster now. I hope this answers your question.
I guess this is sort of back to project management, but how do you manage QC? Quality control and making sure that the code doesn't turn into 300 or 1,000 lines of spaghetti.
Did I get it right? How we do quality control in the end? I think it's not easily massive spaghetti because, as I just explained, you have more or less, it's very modular. We also try to enhance it by, for example, we put a lot of code into function libraries. And so some programmers will do the function libraries and others will just use the functions. So we try to break it into modules. And this is helping to keep it, it's a monster. It's really a monster by now. But it's a monster you can break down in small entities. And sometimes, yeah, programmers do bad code, and especially if you don't have a big team, and if you don't have much time, and you don't have money to give to people, you will sometimes find out very late. For example, someone will code something and say, okay, I'm done. And the feature is released, and only after a while you will notice that something is not really working as it should, because no one has the time to look into it carefully enough. It's a big problem.
We have an excellent quality quality check. It's the player feedback.
Yes.
If they don't like, if it doesn't work, if it's bugged, be sure we will know 5 minutes after it has been released. If there is a loophole, they will find it.
Yes. And even they are so fast. If you test a feature, and sometimes it happens to you, you are in the process of release, and it's not completely in, and it will give you some gibberish on the screen. You are sure we will have a bug report about it in a minute. But still, the less obvious things. The obvious things, for example, a senseless output to the screen, you will have a bug report in 2 minutes. But there are sometimes problems under the surface. And to find these is very difficult. Of course, the good thing is we have a programmer team, and eventually most code will be checked by a second or third programmer, but sometimes it will take a while before a second person looks at the code. This could be something you could try to improve by having something like a peer review. Like, before you release something, one other member of the team has to go over your code. Especially with newer programmers, we try to do this. We try to pair them up with more experienced programmers. And the more experienced programmer will be responsible to look into the other's code. But if he doesn't have much time or is not paying much attention, it's still the same problem.
Any more questions?
I'm not sure. Did you have a question?
1, 2, 3. Nothing more?
If there are no more questions, maybe there's one thing I want to summarize from what we explained to you. And this is, I'm a little bit worried that maybe it's coming across too much we against LucasArts. And this would be completely wrong, because we're not doing this against, we're doing it with LucasArts. And I think we are very happy so far with how this worked out. And I think LucasArts and LucasFilms also should be complimented for their attitude towards fans and their work. Other companies are very fast to shut down. As I pointed out, most of what fans do is not covered by fair use or anything else. It's simply illegal. And we all, yeah, it is. And we accepted this from the beginning. There was never an argument. We said, yes, it is illegal. We know it, we admit it. And this was actually the basis we could build upon. Also, if we ask, we have a very good relationship over the years with LucasArts, even if it's sometimes difficult and costing patience. But LucasArts and also other people we approach over copyright issues, like other fans who maybe made a good design, and we ask them if we would, they would allow us to use it. I would always encourage people to just try it. If you want to use someone else's copyrighted material, just go to the person and ask. Usually, especially if it's non-profit, people will allow you to use it. If you use it without asking first, they will be angry. If you go to them and ask, say, I want to use it, I will not make money with it, may I? Usually they will allow it to you. And this is even true of big companies like Lucas.
Well, if there is no more question, we would like to thank you very much for your attention. And for those of you who are interested in knowing more about OurGame, we are making another conference dedicated to OurGame design and features tomorrow at 7 in the Dunwoody Room, the Star Wars Room. Thank you very much.